starting to get a clearer picture now at last, nearing the conclusion of the European election counts. Two down, one to go. Luke Ming-Flanagan elected in Midlands North West after reaching the quota. It looks at this point like there were two Fine Gael, one Fianna Fáil seat there, and the last one still in the mix, but the most likely candidate at this stage looking to be the Independent Ireland candidate, Ciarán Mullooly. And in Ireland South, we have a completed count, and we'll go there now to Brian O'Connell, who's standing by. Brian, 15 minutes or so before we came on air, the count wrapped. You're free at last.
We have a completed. Can you say that line again? We have a completed account. It sounds so good. I mean, just a 26 hours really of drama here beginning. I suppose what really began was when Senator Paul Gavin was eliminated and a massive 62% of his vote went to Kathleen Funchen. And I suppose from then on, we kind of had a clearer picture of what was happening. We knew Sean Kelly had been elected here in Ireland South on the first count. Billy Kelleher was well ahead of the chasing pack all the way through. And we pretty much knew he was going to be elected, as he was when John Mullins was eliminated. That put Billy Kelleher over the quota. And then his surplus had to be divided out. And then it came to count 20, which is the count we've just had. And incidentally, we had 20 counts in 2019 as well. So coming into this count, we essentially still had four candidates who were vying for three seats. And this was the transfer of Grace O'Sullivan's close to 70,000 votes. And I'd been teeing this up all day saying, you know, was Grace O'Sullivan more likely to transfer, for example, to Mick Wallace than she was to Kathleen Funchen? Or could Cynthia Ní Bhfiorchú, who at that stage needed as many transfers as she could get, was she going to get the transfer from Grace O'Sullivan? Well, I have to say that's been answered in the last few minutes, because Cynthia Ní Bhfiorchú really benefited more from Grace O'Sullivan than Mick Wallace, and thereby she took the fourth seat, joined her running mate Billy Kelleher on the way to Europe.
Right. At a rate of about 2-1, was it, Brian?
And we'd been hearing that over the last hour. Obviously here all the political handlers had been looking at it and were quite surprised that she was outpolling Mick Wallace so much. I mean, they're all from a similar enough geographic area. I suppose it just shows that she says herself the reason she feels she connected, it was hard work, it was graft. She kept emphasising she wanted to be a voice for rural towns and for farmers. So that's a very significant. I think, if I'm not wrong, it's the first time since 2004 that Fianna Fáil will return four MEPs to Europe. I'm open to be corrected on that. Sinn Féin obviously are celebrating as well. Mary Lou MacDonald arrived here about a half an hour ago with Kathleen Funchen. You kind of knew things were looking good at that stage. And Kathleen took the fifth and final seat here, reclaimed the seat. They had the seat in 2014, you remember. Then Leah Ní Riada from the Cork area went in 2019, having had a pretty poor presidential bid in 2018. And didn't get across the line, despite the fact that in 2019 they had a bigger first preference vote than they had this time. But as I said, it was that decisive transfer, 62% of transfers from Senator Paul Gavin. So they had split the constituency. Paul Gavin had the West, and Kathleen Funchen had the South East. And that almost 16,000 votes was what really put Kathleen Funchen in the frame for her seat. And then in the person to leave, obviously Michael McNamara, had taken the third seat here. He was in very strong position after the first count. And he had done very well on transfers. He did very well on kind of an unusual transfer in a way from the right-wing candidate Derek Bligh, who has obviously called for greater immigration control. And
although Michael McNamara has raised questions in the Dáil about the efficiency of the immigration system, he may not be on the same page ideologically as Derek Bligh.
Yes.
But perhaps raising those concerns made him more conducive to receiving those transfers.
Yeah, and it was kind of seen as a system versus an anti-system, and that's what kind of people have been talking about here the last 2 weeks. Not really talking about left or right anymore. They're talking about system or government versus anti-government, and that seems to be the way the votes were sort of transferring a little bit more. And obviously, the person to lose out here is Independence for Change. Mick Wallace, first elected as an MEP in 2019. And he comes in sixth position, just behind me now in the hall. People are making speeches, a lot of hugs. A lot of tears as well, Colm. You know, it's a very difficult day today. We'd been meeting some of the staff from the political parties that lost out. Some of them moved their families to Brussels in the past 2 years, and they're having to, you know, practical things like find schools next week, like think where they're going to get a job. And I think we don't really think about that sometimes, about the impact it has on the people around candidates who lose out, like Grace O'Sullivan and like Mick Wallace, obviously, tonight. So that's the story here in Ireland. Okay. So it took, what, five, 6 days, 20 counts. But we finally have five MEPs elected. Just as an aside, I mean, I was in here last night and I met Teresa Reedy, the political scientist, and she was trying to sell me the idea of these ballot reading machines, the scanners that they have in Scotland. It would speed everything up. But sure, why would you want that?
I know.
I mean, you'd miss out on the
You're getting nostalgic already for the long term, Brian.
this is like somebody
after labour thinking about their next child. The pain is now a forgotten memory after the joy of the result. If there's any of them floating around the hall there, Brian, you still have a microphone in hand, sure, we'd happily take a clip sometime between now and the end of the programme if they're not too flat out, or indeed you're not too flat out after a long count. Thanks for that. Well, we're going to move to John Cook now for the Midlands Northwest, the latest there. John, you're in Castlebar for us.
That's right, Colm, and we can beat Brian O'Connell there by keeping this count going a bit longer. 6 days after the people of Midlands Northwest constituency voted, and after five long days of counting, Luke Ming Flanagan was elected to the European Parliament for a third term shortly after 8 o'clock tonight on 118,754 votes. The Castlereagh in County Roscommon man celebrated with his wife Judy, daughters Isabel, Katie and Saoirse by his side. They've been here with him throughout the week in the count centre, as well as relatives and friends who sang Campione to the seasoned MEP who may consider running for president next year, as we've heard. His surplus of 5,429 votes wasn't sufficient to elect the leading candidate or save the deposit of another or keep the lowest candidate in the race. So what's happening now is that Fianna Fáil's Lisa Chambers votes are being distributed. She was eliminated, her 62,818 votes being distributed for count number 20, which is expected to take a number of hours to complete. So currently we've Nina Carberry in the lead. She's arrived in Castlebar tonight with husband Ted Walsh, along with his dad Ted Walsh Senior, and their family and a lot of supporters. Maybe some big names from Fine Gael expected as well later on tonight, and some big government names obviously. She's on 90,842 votes. Maria Walsh, 90,015 votes, waiting patiently by here tonight as well. Barry Cowan, 89,449 votes. He's been here with his wife and family throughout the week. His brother, former Taoiseach Brian Cowan, has arrived in Castlebar tonight as well to be with him. So Kieran Mullooly's on 83,194 votes after count number 19. Michelle Gildernew has been passed by the former RTE reporter. 79,398 is her current score. And the gap between Mullooly and the former Northern Ireland Agriculture Minister is now 3,796 votes. So all eyes are on Lisa Chambers' transfers. Well, Sinn Féin will tell you it is, and they're going to be fighting right to the end, because what people are wondering now is, can Chambers' votes get fellow Fianna Fáil candidate Cowan over the line, leaving the two Fine Gael candidates to be elected without reaching the quota? Can they benefit Michelle Gildernew to give her a small chance of overtaking Kieran Mullooly for the fifth seat? Sinn Féin insists they're fighting to the end, Colm, and they say they may seek another count of surpluses if Gildernew is behind Mullooly later on tonight, or dare I say it, tomorrow morning, depending on how far she is behind. For Luke Ming Flanagan and his family, they're finally getting to go home and celebrate. I asked him, along with other media gathered here, how he was feeling after his re-election.
Tell us how you're feeling, Luke.
Oh, I'm feeling absolutely elated, and I'm just honoured to get the opportunity for the third time to represent this constituency. And there's a few people not here today, my mother, my father, my father-in-law, and I'm missing you all, but it's just absolutely brilliant. It's just beyond my wildest dreams. Thanks, Midlands Northwest. Thank you so much.
It took a long time to get here. You must be exhausted at this stage, or ready for work, because you told me you were heading back to Brussels soon.
The work has already begun this week. I've met up with my group and we're going out there next week to try and secure my place on the Agri Committee to try and get real justice for the extensive farmers in this region, and going out there again to the Petitions Committee to try and get real justice for the people affected by defective concrete. And we're going out there on July the 15th, and I hope the other MEPs will follow me and not vote for Ursula von der Leyen. There's 35,000 people dead because of that lady's unconditional support for Israel's genocide, and I hope no Irish MEP votes for it, because if they do, they've forgotten our history. That's what I'm going out there for.
All right, that was Luke Ming-Flanagan, the only elected MEP in that constituency so far. But as you say, John, you could have a result later tonight or into tomorrow. You've also been speaking to an as yet unelected Nina Carberry. You got her on mic, which is good going.
Well, there's been a lot of criticism of Nina Carberry for not being part of the big debates. As we know, Mairead McGuinness, the EU Commissioner and former Midlands Northwest MEP for Fine Gael, was defending her earlier on, saying that people were denigrating her by using the word celebrity candidate. And it wasn't all about media appearances. She said, ask Kieran Mullooly the same questions, she said, about being a relative unknown in terms of being a parliamentarian in Europe. Well, Nina Carberry did arrive with her family this evening, and within the last few minutes, she came into the main theatre here at the Royal Theatre in Castlebar to speak to the media. Spoke about a number of issues. She condemned the shocking findings of the RTE Investigates programme on slaughter in the horse industry last night. Her being, of course, best known for being a jockey, not to mind a Dancing with the Stars winner. And myself and others asked her about these issues she could raise in Europe, about whether it was daunting for her, given how radical a career change it is for her in this entry to politics, and how she's feeling about it all.
I suppose once I took this on, I was going to give it 110%. And for me, it was all about getting out and meeting the people on the ground. I had an amazing team behind me and kept me going the whole way. It was relentless. It was a big campaign on the ground and meeting as many people as I could. And that's why I'm standing here. They obviously believe in me. And it's an incredible feeling that, I suppose, 70-odd people, like you'd see in Croke Park, voting for you. It's amazing, and I really want to do them proud now and deliver for them in Europe.
When we spoke to some of the other candidates this week who were critical that you didn't take part in any debates, what would you say to those people? They said that you were avoiding the debates, and they were saying that maybe your status as a celebrity, you were kind of relying on that to get you through here.
Well, I did debates. I did 6-1, and I was on IFA hustings, and I did Chamber of Commerce hustings. So I felt I'd done my fair share. But as I said, my campaign was all about getting out, meeting the people, and hearing their issues. And that's the whole my campaign was for the full 8-10 weeks. It was full on, because we had to cover so much ground. So that's where I suppose that's why I'm standing here. Is the people obviously believed in me, and I'm delighted to be here. And hopefully everything will go my way now in a couple of hours' time.
Nina Carberry talking to our reporter John Cook there, and free John Cook t-shirts will be available soon if this count doesn't conclude. And thanks very much to both Brian and John. They're John not done yet for their Stakhanovian stoicism and long hours over the last week. It's not quite over for them, but I'm sure John will get to the daylight soon. I better reintroduce the panel, because we've had quite a bit since we opened the programme. Garrett O'Hearn, Fine Gael Senator. Violet Ann Wynne, Independent TD for Clare, is joining us from our Limerick studio. Labour Senator Annie Hoey is here as well. Gabby Agatafitz Skyte, a political reporter with the Irish Independent, and we'll be joined later by Karen Coleman. Gabby, we have a result in Ireland South, and a result's imminent in Midlands Northwest. That remains to be seen. What do you make of the overall picture so far in the European elections?
Yeah, look, it's been quite a long couple of days for journalists, politicians and all the political party staff alike. And those are the joys of our democracy and our democratic system, the PRSTV system. Look, I think overall we've heard a lot of talk about Fianna Fáil, Fine Gael. You know, it's a good day for them, not a very good day for Sinn Féin perhaps. But I do want to make a point and say that it has been a great day for the Independent Ireland Party, which is relatively new formation. They have about 24 councillors now, and now they have an MEP, and of course Niall Boylan in Dublin, the RDS count in Simmons Court. I was covering that myself over the weekend and into early this week. I mean, he was very close there. He nearly got elected, and that is some feat for a new party. Sinn Féin will be disappointed with the turnout and the vote in Midlands Northwest. Certainly their only incumbent MEP, Chris McManus, he's lost the seat. Of course, Matt Carty won that seat in 2019, and then when he won the Dáil seat, or when he was going to run for the general election, Chris McManus was co-opted there. You know, that's a disappointment. And I think Michelle Gildernew, the former Stormont minister, she got a lot more votes than Chris McManus. But, you know, I think Fianna Fáil, Fine Gael would be delighted. You know, they've gained their Fianna Fáil two seats in Ireland South, and an extra seat that they would have expected. And Fine Gael got an extra seat in Midlands North West than they would have expected. Michael McNamara as well, you know, he's an independent Clare TD. You know, he won that seat as well in Ireland South. And as you pointed out there, he has talked a lot about immigration in recent months and weeks. And so I think it's interesting how that has played out in these elections and how it's become a key issue now for voters and non-voters' minds.
All right, Garrett Ahern. It's looking good in Midlands Northwest. You'll be happy enough with your result in the four-seater in Dublin. Sean Kelly's first preference vote, impressive in Ireland South. That's wrapped now. But your partners in government, Fianna Fáil, taking in a second candidate, due probably to better geographic considerations in the constituency. Would you concede that?
Well, I suppose what I'd concede is we've had a very good day. In the European elections, we've returned, hopefully, by tonight, four MEPs, which I certainly don't think would have been expected a number of weeks or a number of months ago. There was talk that we might only win one seat at one point. And obviously, Sean got a huge vote in Ireland South. He's well respected in the area and is going into his fourth term. Regina came in first in Dublin at the end, and we've had a brilliant two candidates working together in Midlands Northwest. That on the last count, I think there's only 800 votes between them. They're both on 90,000, so it's been incredibly successful. But I suppose to your question in relation to Ireland South. Look, there'll be a review done on the elections. And, you know, if we look at it from a whole, it's been a very good day for Fine Gael in terms of European elections and local elections with 245 councillors. But there's always areas where we can miss out on seats, look and review and say, what could we have done differently? And I suspect Ireland South will be one of those that we'll say, well, you know, in future, what can we do differently here? And maybe we can learn from Midlands Northwest how well that was done. Between the two candidates. But look, like you can't get every constituency in the whole country done perfectly, strategised perfectly. But if we were given this 2 months ago, we'd have certainly taken it.
All right. Annie Howie, similar. There was probably realistically only one seat that Labour was seriously in the running for in the European elections, and it paid off. Did the result in Dublin actually surprise the Labour Party? Because a lot of political journalists who were talking to Labour people seemed to indicate that the campaign only took hold at the midway point, and Labour began to believe only when it had got started.
I mean, that sounds kind of news to me. Like, there was always a strong feeling that could do well in Dublin. We had a brilliant candidate. Éan is extremely well known. If I hear the phrase "for the love of Dublin" once more, I might burst. We heard it so often. But it was a campaign that I think captured the imagination of people, and I think it captured the possibility of what Dublin could be. You know, we talked a lot about what inspired him to run from the Dublin riots, and really set out an extremely clear case for Dublin and Ireland about welcoming people, about not allowing immigration and misinformation and disinformation take over. And, you know, I think that was consistent throughout his whole campaign. He put many times in all of his public appearances, he put it to the people, you could vote for hope and progress in Dublin, or you could vote for something else. So
what did you learn from the transfer patterns, do you think?
Well, I think obviously the Ciarán Cuff transfers were, the green-red transfers were enormous at the end. You know, we got an enormous transfer pattern coming from the Greens. I think in removing the Labour Party out of some of these transfers, some of the things that we were seeing in county centres were wild. The voting patterns were all over the place for some of the local elections, certainly.
But pretty decent between Greens, mm-hmm. Social Democrats, Labour, and even in the Dublin European count, People Before Profit, Breed Smith, despite their own stated view that Labour needs to still wear sackcloth and ashes for a bit longer over the austerity years, a pretty decent transfer there too.
Yeah, and I think it shows that progressive vote that there is, obviously because we wouldn't have gotten the seat otherwise, that people, I think, can associate those various candidates with progressive issues and transfer accordingly to them. Like, obviously, as you said, we got transfers coming from the Greens, from the Social Democrats, from from PPP, from other left candidates, much I'm sure to some people's chagrin, but we did indeed get them. And I think that shows the strength of that left progressive vote. And I would hope that we'd be able to continue that progressive left voting going into what is going to be a general election in the next 6 months.
All right. Violet Ann Wynne, Michael McNamara, an independent for Clare, elected there. What are your feelings on this European election, particularly in Ireland South? Is he your kind of independent?
Yeah, I want to firstly congratulate Michael McNamara on his very successful European election. And I'm thinking of his family. I think he has a very young family. So it's, you know, inspiring, I suppose, to see how it has panned out for himself. I know at times there he wasn't sure how it was going to work with transfers, but he has been very transfer friendly, I would think, from the results and watching the counts and how they have been divvied out. I think the transfer situation in all of the elections has been very interesting to watch unfold. A lot of people commenting on the fact that it was, I suppose, there was no pattern, and it was a huge surprise to see how they were, I suppose, being distributed to all of the other candidates. So yeah, I'm, you know, he's a constituency colleague of my own as well, and there have been some issues that we would have agreement on, and yeah, I wish him well in the European Union.
Right. Okay, and there's somebody in Europe you can pick up the phone
yes.
to in the years ahead. Just I mean, you are a former member of Sinn Féin. You were saying, you know, the transfers were all over the place,
yeah.
but less so really with Sinn Féin. It was up to a 60% transfer rate there, which was pretty impressive. It remains to be seen whether the votes in Midlands North West that kept Michelle Gildernew in the race till this point will be enough to see her benefit from Lisa Chambers' votes. But overall, the Sinn Féin transfer rate was pretty well maintained. What did you make of that?
Yeah, I suppose I put that down to their strategy in terms of the number of candidates that they ran, and in some respects that obviously was not it wasn't the election for it, especially in respect of the local elections, but I think having a two candidate strategy in most of the constituencies for the European elections has worked in their favour. Had they not, you know, this, we would be having a whole different conversation today or tonight about the results, because, you know, they wouldn't have even come near, I suppose, even anywhere near the top seats in any of the constituencies. So I think that was something that, well, they were hoping that they were going to get both candidates over the line in each of the constituencies, going by how they were faring in the polls. But, you know, they have seen massive reductions in the last number of months that, you know, they kept, you know, dismissing as not important, not something that they're paying attention to. But clearly, I think by the results, they do need to. There may be cohesion within their party and amongst their members in terms of supporting their candidates, but that would be something that I would expect, and that, you know, most parties would expect to see, I suppose, for them
right.
to be transfer friendly to each other.
Where did it go wrong for them in the locals, in your estimation? Because, you know, there seems to be two schools of thought. There's the Dáithí Doolan was on with us last night. He was saying, actual, you know, if you look back at 2019, it was an increase on the vote. It was a good day out. They have an MEP in Dublin, etc., etc. That's one way of looking at it. And then you have the party leadership who conceded that against expectations, it was a disappointing result. There was a criticism
yeah.
maybe of the number of candidates and how that split the canvassing teams and all of that. I appreciate you're no longer in the party again, but you would have an informed view. What did you think of it?
Yeah, I think, you know, they let the ball slip there completely. I think there has been a number of issues in terms of, I suppose, public response to the party itself and their management of, I suppose, even their messaging. That's, I suppose, been an issue over the years anyway. But I think there's been a massive, I suppose, concern amongst the public around their credibility. You know, I think the nail in the coffin really in the last few months was their stance on the referendum. And I think the issue for the public is that they can no longer differentiate between Sinn Féin and the you know, main establishment parties such as Fine Gael and Fine Gael, they said that they were going to be the strongest opposition the state has ever seen, but that is not what the public feeling out there is. They feel that they have not been strong enough in terms of opposing government policy and being able to fight back against, you know, the referendum in particular. The issue there was around the wording and also about educating the public as well, being able to inform the public as to what the referendum was about. So I think, you know, Sinn Féin now are just focused on leading government, or had right. been so focused on leading government that they lost it there when it came to strategy. And I've heard as well that not a lot of people did get knocks on their doors from their candidates. So there's an issue there in terms of having feet on the ground and support amongst their members.
Okay. All right. Thanks for that, Violet. I just want to get to a text from a listener, because this is Eugene, who is in Greece. He says, "We're the laughingstock of Europe with our outdated one transfer system. I'm here in Greece and the locals think we are so inefficient in returning results. While Greece have their results in and are well on the way to establishing their influence in the European Parliament, we should bow our heads in shame at this outdated and embarrassing European electoral system." I will come to the panel on that, but I do want to go to Karen Coleman, who's editor of EU News Radio Ireland. Karen, good evening to you. Thanks for joining us.
Good evening, Colm.
We're still at it in Midlands Northwest.
I know.
But the sentiment that's been expressed there by Eugene in Greece, I mean, on the one hand, PRS-TV with the Paul Pair August Pian Louis is transparent democracy, which is an investment in legitimacy. But on the other hand, does the length of the count in any way affect our influence in Europe when the parties, heads of parties, have already met and begun to discuss the divvy up of jobs in the Parliament?
Yes, I mean, I don't think it does really, Colm, to any great extent, because they know we have had the slowest return system among the 27 EU member states. But what will have to happen is that those MEPs now, and hopefully by the end of this evening or early tomorrow morning, will know the final results from the Midlands Northwest. They'll have to make their way out to Brussels. We already heard Luc Ming Flanagan on your programme say he's already been in touch with his group. I mean, it's very easy, if you like, for the Fianna Fáilers, the Fine Gaelers, for the likes of Sinn Féin and Luc Ming Flanagan. They already know what groups they're going to go to. Fine Gael will go to the EPP, the biggest political group in the European Parliament. Fianna Fáil, those MEPs will go to Renew Europe, and Sinn Féin will go to the GUI NGL, as will Luc Ming Flanagan. And as you heard Luke talk about, that he wants to get back onto the agricultural committee, a powerful European Parliament committee, and he wants to get on that commissions or the petitions committee as well. So the other MEPs will also be trying to now juggle their positions and get on to the European parliamentary committees that they want to try and influence. And that's where there will be a lot of to-ing and fro-ing. I mean, the way it works is from now on, they're going to start to decide how many members should be in those European political committees. That will happen in the plenary session that's going to take place in July. And then after that, the members of those parliamentary committees will be appointed. So there are a few weeks now before those parliamentary committees will be fully bedded down and before we will know who will be in them.
So that the, I think the Conference of Presidents, that's the heads of all of the party
yes.
groups in the European Parliament, met on Wednesday, was it? And is anything major decided at that point, or is that still TBC?
I think they'll have ideas about who should be heads of those committees, perhaps, but there will still be room for manoeuvre on that and discussion. And obviously another big thing that's going to happen as well, Colm, is the nomination or the appointment of the President of the European Parliament. Now, that's going to come up again in that first plenary session of this new legislative term in July. One of the first things the MEPs will be doing is electing the President of the European Parliament. It's widely believed that Roberta Metsola, the current president, will be reappointed for another 2.5 years, and then they'll appoint the vice presidents of the European Parliament and then the sort of secretariat as well. So that's right. going
There's
to happen.
There's a fair
well.
Few of them, isn't there, the vice presidents?
Oh, yes. I mean, I think it's something, like 10 of them. There are a lot of them on the actual secretary or as vice presidents. But the very interesting thing will be whether they will be voting on the president of the European Commission, because we're still, it's still not clear if von der Leyen will get the backing of the qualified majority of the EU leaders. There's an informal meeting of the European Council taking place on Monday, and they're set to discuss some of the top positions, including obviously the president of the Commission. Now, von der Leyen, Ursula von der Leyen, should be in a pole position to get their backing, because the EPP has and she's EP from the EPP group, and they've done actually very well during these elections. So it would be normal then that their candidate would become the president of the European Commission. But, you know, it's not necessarily guaranteed, and it certainly then isn't guaranteed that the European Parliament, when they do get to vote on her appointment, if she does get the backing of the Council, and that's either going to be in July or it could potentially be in September, it's not clear yet if she will get the backing that she needs, which is it's 361 votes that she needs.
Where does she need to be worried, Karen? Is it is it amongst the Socialists and Democrats, where Éan Éireadán will sit with the Labour Party? Is it amongst dissident members of the EPP, or is it, you know, the Greens who will have a big decision to make as to whether they want her in, and they can convince her to back to continue the work of the Green Deal and to keep her away from the hard right, or whether they decide not to support her?
I think it's going to be a very, very interesting vote, Colm, and in the weeks up to it, to see what way are those political groups jockeying now for future influence. Because the vote for the European Commission president, it isn't just about putting her in a position of power. It's also stating what it is you want her to do on your behalf in terms of the political groups. I saw that the actual Green group, which has gone down in numbers, they're saying that they might be prepared to back her. They didn't the last time, but they might be prepared to back her if they thought that she was going to go ahead still with the Green Deal issues, which they're very much supported. But on the other hand, we mustn't lose sight of the fact that the hard right, the far-right numbers have increased significantly in the European Parliament, and they will also be trying to get something from von der Leyen. And it's going to be very interesting to see, like, because of the numbers that have come through now with the European People's Party, the Socialists and the Democrats then on the centre-left, and then Renew, the Liberal group as well, she could get elected if they all voted for her. But it's a private vote, so nobody will declare what way they voted. Right. And people from her own party might vote against her.
And finally, just and briefly, Karen, on the Irish MEPs that are returning, I mean, I think I've heard it said before that veteran MEPs do better. Is there any chance of people who are on their second or third term going back and getting one of those vice president positions at this stage? Or are they largely going to be divided out amongst MEPs representing larger member states?
Well, they certainly, I mean, it will be the bigger number of VP seats will go to the likes of those parties, the Socialists and the Democrats and the EPP, who have the higher numbers. That doesn't rule out the fact that, you know, the likes of either Sean Kelly, who obviously has significant seniority now, but it takes time, it takes juggling. I'm not convinced that they will be nominated for those VP positions. I mean, Mairead McGuinness was a very successful vice president of the European Parliament and was potentially in line to become the president of the European Parliament before she took over the European Commission job. So she had made her way up the ranks. And I'm not so sure. I mean, certainly Regina Doherty, Maria Walsh and Nina Carberry, if she gets elected, clearly they won't be, I don't think, in any position to get any senior role. Sean Kelly would be the one, Fine Gaeler, who would have seniority.
Right.
Maybe, I mean, I don't know, maybe Barry Andrews or Billy Kelleher, but it takes an awful lot of wheeling dealing behind the scenes to get into those positions.
Okay, horse trading. Maybe Nina Carberry is well placed on that front. All right,
maybe
Karen,
so.
Thanks very much. I'm going to have just back to the panel in studio. Just Annie Hoy, briefly to you on that. Éan Éireadán, if the Socialists and Democrats group decide strategically that it's in their interests to provide their backing to Ursula von der Leyen, how do you think Éan Éireadán will vote on that?
I think Éan Éireadán's been on the record a number of times saying that he won't be voting for Ursula von der Leyen as the president. I don't think I'm misquoting him there on sure. that. He's been on the record a number of times. We're quite firm in our belief around Palestine and Gaza and how she has facilitated that. And I would be... I would be fairly confident that he's going to stick to his word on that.
All right. I think the Fine Gael MEPs have said they would vote in favour yeah. of her record on balance over, is it Brexit and the pandemic, in your view, outweighs the initial unequivocal backing she gave to Israel at the beginning of this.
Yeah, but I think we were very vocal at the time that we didn't agree with that backing. But no, they will all four will be supporting Ursula von der Leyen in that role. And I think Sean Kelly actually is in a strong position. He's gone into his fourth term.
He did vote against the EPP on the nature restoration law, though, so he may have dirtied his bib on that.
Yeah, he did. But I think on this, he'll certainly be supporting Ursula von der Leyen. But look, I think if Maria and Nina get elected tonight, I think they'll be doing the same. But it's an interesting point about the system in terms of voting, because Regina was elected on Tuesday night at about 10 o'clock, and 6 o'clock in the morning, the following morning, she was flying to Brussels to negotiate in terms of positions that might be coming up. And Nina and Maria can't do that. So there is an argument in doing it quicker. I don't think we'd want to take it away from local elections, the excitement of tallies, but certainly from a European election, I think there is an argument to try and get it done quicker.
All right, Gabby, that's been said. If possibly, you know, so some of the arguments have been make it harder to run and shorten the list. That way, the other argument is have bigger counting venues, more staff applied to it, and just get the votes wrapped up quicker.
Yeah, it wasn't only Regina Doherty. I was talking to Barry Andrews, and he was saying, I think he got elected about 10 o'clock, and then he was on the plane, yeah, first thing in the morning. He's like, I have to go back to Brussels in the morning to continue my work over there. I mean, like, I really find it hard to believe that the couple of candidates that are towards the very long ballot sheet, which is as the length of your arm. I mean, surely the last five are disadvantaged purely by the fact that they are so far down the ballot. There was talk in the count centres, just talking to people that were there. I was saying, look, is there a case to be made for a horizontal ballot, for example? But then people were saying, look, would that make it more complicated? How would that affect our system? Would it make it harder for the people that are actually counting the votes? Is there an argument to be made for separating out the two elections, having locals one or Europeans first and then locals maybe a day or two later, or maybe having them together just earlier? Certainly, I don't think it would be
it
very...
It might make for less votes to count if you put them on different days.
Certainly, if you were to separate them out, I mean, the turnout would be even worse. So I don't think that would be a good idea. But because of our PRSTV system, look, it just takes a little bit longer. And I will make the point that there was a group of Americans who came here with an NGO that backs democracy. And they were here for a week leading up to the elections, and they were in the RDS Count Centre on Saturday. They were observing the elections, because they are so impressed by the PRSTV system, and they believe that perhaps America should also jump on the bandwagon. Now, I don't know how long it would take for their counts. Certainly in some of the states, they'd be there for a few weeks, I'd say. But people do believe that it is one of the most democratic ways to do it.
All right. Violet Ann Wynne, I want to get your opinion first of all, because we heard from Luke Ming Flanagan when he was talking to John Cook there. One of the things he was considering was running for the presidency as an independent. Would you back that?
Yeah, it was very interesting to hear him speak about that. Now, he did say it was just an idea and he doesn't know where he's going to go with that. So, I mean, that's the first thing that stuck out to me.
You give him a signature if he came looking for it?
I mean, he's independent, but again, I mean, I have a real issue with those who have political positions using labels when it comes to, you know, certain peoples in societies and having viewpoints. And I just have it's a hard line for me. I just think that it creates or adds division. It doesn't help. It actually stokes the fire. So I think, you know, there is a need for that to be reflected upon. You know, obviously, I do support independence, but I don't believe putting people into boxes actually works or helps or adds anything to the conversation. And that's what I've been trying to look for, I suppose, is those independents that are able to point to the fact that, look, these kind of labels, they don't do any justice. And as I said, they stoke the fire. So,
How would you describe yourself as an independent? I mean, if you had to put a prefix on the word independent, what kind of an independent are you?
a word.
Well, I mean, are you a left independent? Are you a progressive independent? Are you a conservative independent? Are you a... You know, I don't know. Pick your word that best describes you. You're the independent.
Yeah, I suppose left, progressive, maybe. I mean, I care about County Clare. I care about my constituents, but I also care for those who have been marginalised the most and feel like they've been left behind and that they don't have a voice or that they're not being represented in politics. I mean, that's what pushed me into politics in the first place, was because I didn't really see anybody that I could relate to other than, I suppose, you know, the party that I went with in the end. And obviously there would have been individuals there that you know, I felt I could relate to at the time. But, you know, for me, it's about local services and ensuring that there is regional balance for the likes of County Clare, because, you know, it has seen significant underinvestment now for the last number of years. And my aim and my focus is to ensure that that equity is brought to County Clare.
All right. And the party group Independent Ireland, do you think they're party or an independent? Just to give your independent view on it.
It's actually quite vague, I suppose, at this point, like with Kieran Mullooly saying that he wasn't with a party when he was knocking on doors. That was, you know, confusing people, I think. And then also when the party itself was formed. Now, I will say they've done exceptionally well, considering that they have only been formed in the last number of months, which I suppose not everybody was expecting, and fair dues to them for that. But again, I suppose they have pointed to the fact that even in the Dáil that they wouldn't exercise the whip, for example, in votes. So I'm very interested to see how that's going to work.
Gabby, they're going to have a target on their back, independents, coming into the next election, because you have a situation now where there's a decent-ish transfer between Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael. They won't particularly want to fight with each other to jeopardise that. They've probably used up all the credit they've already had over, you know, pointing out the differences between themselves and Sinn Féin. So the only target left really is the independents, isn't it?
Yeah, so People Before Profit, I think, came out and they said, you know, some of the independent candidates that are running in the local and Europeans, they're, is it a wolf in sheep's clothing or a sheep in wolf's clothing? I forget. I think they flipped the phrase. But basically saying that they're Fianna Fáil, Fine Gael candidates that are just pretending to be independents, and actually they will support the government, or Fianna Fáil, Fine Gael, if they're in government. But of course, we've had independents in government previously. And I think that is very much so looking again, even though we've had years, the past 4 years have been very much so the rise of Sinn Féin in the opinion polls. You know, they were in the mid-30s. That's obviously come plummeting down. And there was, I think, this notion that the next government could only be Sinn Féin, Fianna Fáil. That idea has fallen apart a little bit now, and certainly what the polls are suggesting, even though they're not always right, as Fianna Fáil would insist and have been insisting over the weekend very passionately, is that it could be Fianna Fáil, Fine Gael independence coalition of some sort after the next general election, whenever that may be. And so I think the independents now have real power, like they've always had, especially when you look at crucial votes in the Dáil, because there was such a slim majority by the government. For example, the one on the eviction ban, we saw Housing Minister Dara Bryan going in negotiating with independent TDs, saying, look, in terms of policies, what is it that you want so that I can get your vote? And we had, you know, independent TDs dictating housing policy there for a while.
Not for the first time. I just want to go to back to Castlebar, because our reporter John Cook there caught up with the Taoiseach, Simon Harris, who was in Castlebar. And what John asked him was if his celebrity double act was key to Fine Gael's apparent victory there.
Well, I say it's clearly nonsense. We just won the election, haven't we? Nina Carberry and Maria Walsh just been elected. So, I mean, you know, funnily enough, our political opponents will say those sorts of things, wouldn't they?
Well, is celebrity status key to getting to Europe now?
Well, sorry, Nina Carberry's not a celebrity, she's a champion. She's a champion, so a little less pejorative language would be useful when you actually have people who are award-winning, people who run businesses, people who write books, joining the experienced MEP. This is an incredible ticket of two female MEPs being elected here in Midlands North West, and I'm incredibly proud of both of them. And I know the people of Midlands North West are incredibly proud of both of them, and that's why I think they exceeded all of the expectations of all of the pundits who yet again got this wrong in trying to predict what the people of this constituency would do. I'm absolutely ecstatic with this result. I'm so proud of Nina, so proud of Maria. So to give a resounding result to Nina and Maria, and I'm incredibly proud of both of them and incredibly grateful to the people.
Taoiseach, it looks like there could be five by-elections coming up now. When will we have them, or are you going to wait and just have a general election in the autumn?
We'll decide when to have the by-elections in due course. I haven't had an opportunity to assess that yet and to talk to the other party leaders in our coalition about that. I certainly don't fear by-elections. But this government will continue its work. We've already been back at work, obviously, this week, working on a number of big issues. And my view on the timing of the general election hasn't changed.
All right, Taoiseach Simon Harris there. It's his, Garrett Ahern, it's his prerogative to call the general election. So you can offer an opinion on it that clearly doesn't carry any sway. So five by-elections. Stagger, you know, held on one day.
Is it five or four? Is it four?
Well, if there's a cabinet minister sense, okay. So yeah. if the four TDs heading to Europe, there's four guaranteed by-elections, yeah. and if the pick for commissioner comes from cabinet, which is the received wisdom, if you want to get an influential position amongst the commissioners, that's five by-elections. Five by-elections offer the opposition a chance to coalesce and hammer the government and chip away at their majority, and it offers Sinn Féin recovery time. An early general election perhaps offers the government parties the chance to cash in on their local election momentum, if that's the right way to describe it, given that your seat count actually came down.
Sorry, can I actually just say that I was told during the week that there won't be a by-election, no matter who is a commissioner, because they won't take office until the 1st of November. So even if there is a minister, the 6 month time allowed before an election is called brings us beyond the date for which a general election will need to be called. So there's a bit of ambiguity as to whether or not there will be a by-election in that case. But anyway,
well, thank you for bringing your facts A game there based on that. So even four or five, whatever, Garrett Ahern, it offers the opposition an opportunity that perhaps you'd rather not offer them, and it also, you know, pushes the election into next year when you'd perhaps rather not have it.
Gabby's on top form tonight.
As always.
Yeah, but you say it gives the opposition an opportunity. It gives Fine Gael an opportunity also. These are all constituencies where we have TDs who are retiring, actually, funnily enough, all four. So it gives us an opportunity to build profile and to hopefully win seats. Look, it's the prerogative of the Taoiseach when he'll have the election.
And then if it doesn't work out, you go to the country and you have another tilt at it.
Yeah, but we had the four by-elections the last time and it didn't work out in those by-elections. But some people who ran then got elected into the Dáil. Colin Burke got elected, now a minister. Eamonn Higgins got elected, now a minister. So you just don't know, just like we couldn't predict the local elections this week. You can't predict by-elections. You can't just assume that the opposition will naturally win them. Okay. Obviously, and by-elections gone by, opposition do quite well. But look, it's progress of Taoiseach. He's been consistent from the very start that he's going to March.
Okay. Annie Hoey, are you going to say general election now? Is that would you prefer an early one as well?
Yeah, I think any political party worth their salt is gearing up for a general election come September, October, preparing and checking our carry boards and making sure that we're ready to go whenever
smaller
it comes.
Smaller parties don't have to waste their resources on two goes out. Would you prefer to leave it to next year, though, and let the coffers recover?
No, I think we've been saying that it's time for a general election for a while. We would like to go to the people and give the people the opportunity to have their say in who runs the country over the next 5 years. And if that has to be in October, then we are more than ready for that and eager to get going.
Okay. Are you going to run?
Am I going to run? That'll be up to my constituency members if
they
select.
Would you like to run?
I've ran before in a general election, so it wouldn't be any surprise, I'm sure, if I was to stick my name on the ballot.
Violet Ann Wynne, any thoughts on the timing of it? Would you prefer an autumn election?
Well, I think a lot has gone on in the last 4 years, so I think it is probably imminent that we do have a general election in the foreseeable few weeks. And what I'm hearing is a lot of people are speculating that there's going to be a massive giveaway budget and then a general election planned for November. But I have noticed, I suppose, that the Taoiseach has stuck to his lines in terms of wanting to ensure stability and for everyone to continue the hard work. And I think it's yet to be seen. But I mean, when it comes to the general election in particular, people want to see people who that they feel they can offer their vote to. So I mean, it gives everybody an opportunity to reflect on the elections and how they surprised us all in terms of how people did vote and the turnout and everything else. So I would expect probably the former, as I explained.
Okay.
The giveaway.
All right.